This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we'll be discussing Rise of the Old Masters, the third episode in Season 1. Joining us today on Rebels Reactions is returning guest Mike Pilot. Mike is the co-host on the best Star Wars podcast out there, Full of Sith, whose weekly Star Wars discussion is must-listen-to entertainment for Star Wars fans. In addition to this, Mike was recently inducted as an honorary member of the Empire City Garrison of the 501st, as well as a huge Darth Vader fan, which makes him an expert in the dark side of the Force. We are happy to welcome Mike back to join us for a cup of coffee to discuss this important episode that truly introduces us to the Inquisitor. Welcome back, Mike.
Oh, buddies.
So, guys, what is your overall opinion on Rise of the Old Masters?
Corey, do you want to take this one first?
Sure, I'll go with it. First right off the bat, I mean, Rise of the Old Masters, that title alone just gives me goosebumps. That sounds so awesome. I don't know what it is, but when I heard that, I was like, that is a sweet-sounding episode. And, of course, the episode itself was just oozing with all kinds of goodness. We get into the bulk of some of the Jedi background. We get to see... Inquisitor for the first time, a whole bunch of action, it's a stealth mission. We get to see all kinds of fun things as far as, what's going on, after the Clone Wars. And we get caught up on what's going on as far as the Jedi's role and what the Empire has in store for some of them and stuff like that. And I think all in all, it is an excellent episode. I look forward to, more episodes like this, with this background and this exploration of each of the characters. But yeah, I was knocked out of the park, definitely.
I would say from the get-go, this has to be my favorite episode so far on so many levels. There's a lot of, like we talked about on Full of Sith, there's a lot of that, winks back to the old movies and the Clone Wars and things like that. So I'm a sucker for those things. I like that little bit of reminder of things. But the emotional issues between Ezra and Kanan, Ezra being... he doesn't have anybody, he finally finds somebody, and then he feels like he wants to leave him to give him to somebody else to be his master, and fighting those feelings, and Kanan not feeling like he's strong enough. There was just so many things in this episode that I really grasped onto that I liked a lot. I actually watched it twice. First of all, the beginning started off very funny. There was a lot of comic relief in it. There was a lot of Chopper was very funny. A lot of the back and forth between Zeb and Ezra was good. So I like that, especially when Kanan brings up the do or do not. There is no try. Mm-hmm. And Ezra's like, well, what does that mean? And the whole thing, because Master, I like that. I like that whole little bit of dialogue there. That was fun. One thing that stuck out to me earlier in the episode is when Kanan calls his lightsaber a light sword. Did that strike anybody?
A laser sword. Laser sword, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that too. That was very, very early George Lucas.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I heard laser swords. I had to write that down. Another thing I noted is that Kanan is a lot stronger with the Force than I expected him to be. I mean, I know that he might be one of the last Jedis, and he's going to be training Ezra, but he was really, really strong. He force-held Ezra from falling.
A long way, yeah.
I mean, that was pretty impressive. When he was fighting the stormtroopers in the prison, when he force-pulled the two stormtroopers to him and did that double clothesline, that was really cool. I really liked that.
That was fantastic. Well, you're pointing out a lot of really fun things that we see about Kanan that I thought were fascinating. What I want to jump to really quickly is just the title alone, Rise of the Old Masters. Huru, what do you think that title is actually referring to? Because it's a bit ambiguous.
Well, I think, right, like Corey said in the beginning, you hear that, you read that that's the name of the episode, and you start thinking Sith. You start thinking maybe you're going to see more of the Emperor. You're going to see more of, you know, just on the rebel side of things, more evil, which it was a fitting time for the Inquisitor to come into the episode, because this whole time, I mean, everybody who has been excited for Rebels has been waiting to see the Inquisitor and see him in action. And I can't say that I'm disappointed in the least bit.
Absolutely not. What about you, Corey? When you hear Rise of the Old Masters, what did you think they were referring to?
Yeah, I mean, my mind instantly went to the Old Masters, the Old Jedi Masters. I mean, obviously, I mean, we're going to wonder where they're going to be at and what their state of being is going to be. And you know, even the title alone, Rise of the Old Masters, it sounds like it could be put into a film, you know,
like an old kung fu movie or something.
Well, I mean, like, you know, Return of the Jedi, you've got Empire Strikes Back, you got Rise of the Old Masters. So I think it fit perfectly, but I was like, Masters, plural. That's interesting. But then in the other sense, too, as we get into the episode, we learn that, you know, it's Kanan's really taking a new role here in this episode, and he has to come to grips with that.
Well, and when I hear Rise of the Old Masters, I thought it could be a couple things that Mike mentioned Yoda. They talk about Luminara, obviously. She's an old master. And it's like maybe Kanan is having a rise within himself of all of his old masters that guided him in the Jedi Temple. It could be the fact that Kanan and the Inquisitor are dueling, and they're like the old masters. The Jedi and the Sith are coming full circle, even though the Inquisitor is not Sith, so that'll be fun to see. But it definitely harkens back to some strong ideologies of the Jedi and the Jedi Knights. And Mike, you had mentioned Ezra's training. We did see some cool things about lightsabers. Like, they actually said canonically how you can adjust the level of the blade.
Yeah.
That was very cool. And then you mentioned do or do not. Some people are going to say that they're trying too hard to reference the original trilogy. And Mike, you've already gone on record as saying that you liked it. I liked it too, because of the way that they called it back at the end. How did you feel about that, Corey?
You know, when I first heard it, I was like, oh, here we go with the kind of little winks and nods. And then, like you said, Dan, it does come full circle at the end. And it seems to really push that phrase a little bit harder. I think it seems like it really meant more to me now that it's you know, you do and do not. And he was trying the entire time to be the master and be the teacher there, and he has to do it or not do it, and that just really focused the whole episode on that phrase. So I think really is really cool to have it come full circle like that at the end.
Well, and Ezra even throws it back at him later when they're about to attack the prison.
Yes,
I want to go back just a minute to the Rise of the Old Masters.
Yeah,
we find out, or we see in some Star Wars rumors, that in episode 7 we might see a bunch of Inquisitors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I'm going with that. Like, we have this first Inquisitor. I don't know. That's why I kind of took it that way. I could see where both you guys are coming from with the old masters of Kanan and maybe Yoda. And I could see that too. Or even the Inquisitor facing off against Kanan. I like that idea too. But that's why I went that direction, I guess, in my head. That, and I just think that when you bring a villain into something, into a movie, into a book, into a show, it just makes all the other characters so much stronger.
It does.
So having him there brought things more together than the first couple of episodes did. And I always like that when a villain comes on screen and people are running away, how they casually walk towards where they're going. But then you actually saw the Inquisitor start speeding things up and running along. Another ongoing joke in the episode that I liked, and I'm sure some people will have a problem with, is with the Inquisitor's lightsaber or light sword or whatever you want to call it. But them asking, well, first Ezra said it, and then Zeb said it. Does yours do that too? I like that. Was funny. That made me laugh both times.
That was fun. Well, I actually had stuff for the Inquisitor a little bit later, but let's just dive right into it now. We finally get to see the Inquisitor in action. how do you think you both think that he fits into the mold of Star Wars villains? Granted, he's only on screen for about 6 minutes.
I think that they couldn't have picked, maybe, I'm going to say on the record, I don't think they could have picked anybody better than Jason Isaacs to do that voice.
Oh, yeah.
That fit so well, and he's played a bad guy so many times so well that I really enjoyed it. There's a lot that we don't know about the Inquisitor. There's a lot that we're going to learn. And just as, you know, a fan of the bad guys sometimes, I am really excited how deep or how bad they can get with the Inquisitor.
Corey, what about you?
Yeah, he was definitely, you know, a presence. You know, and he walks into that little cell and introduces himself, and you're like, okay, it's on. I mean, he's not joking around. I mean, he has two instances where he's close to killing either of them, you know, putting them down for good. And it's just, he doesn't mess around. Like you said, Mike, you know, he's purposeful. He gets the point. He doesn't really screw up a whole lot. You know, it's just a matter of like, I'll get to them eventually. I'm just toying with them now in a sense to see what's
it's
going
like
on
here.
Like
a cat with a mouse.
There you go. Yeah.
He did it the whole time with Ezra when he knocked Kanan back and tried to bring him to the dark side.
Yeah. Just a slight little hint, which is of course the dark side is famous for. And I thought it was pretty cool how he's got this like, he's got this calm. He's almost got like this smooth gait to his walk, and he's very much like controlled. And I'm not going to necessarily say rage. You can tell there's some anger there and some intense passion, but you can tell he's cerebral just in the way he enacts the fight. And then he mentions, oh, I can tell who your master is by the way you're fighting, and you're really overly relying on this form. And Kanan is really thrown by this. And how could you possibly know this? So they open up a lot of cool ideas.
He said he went through the Jedi archives. I mean, the fact that he studied all the Jedis.
Exactly.
What's in the archives. That is very cerebral.
It was very cool. And it just shows that he's a thinker and he's a man of action too. He's like an Indiana Jones from an evil perspective. And so you see some of that dialogue. Do you guys think that the Inquisitor was holding back? We mentioned the idea of the cat and mouse. He was toying with. Do you think he was holding back, or do you think Kanan was a little more powerful than he expected?
Go
ahead, Corey.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, I think he was holding back a little bit. I mean, and he didn't expect Kanan to be as powerful. Like Mike, you mentioned before, Kanan's very powerful in the Force, and I didn't expect that either. It was totally awesome. And, you know, he kind of walks into this fight knowing somewhat who Kanan is and his dueling, stances and forms and whatnot. So it's like, he's kind of like, okay, I'm going to toy this a little bit and see how far I can go, how much power I can use. But in the end, he's holding back a little bit as far as what he really can, give out.
Well, getting back to the cerebral part, I think that he was definitely toying with him. Just like any kind of bad guy, you know, he's very confident in himself. It's going to end the way that he wants it to end. And, you know, you have to learn a lot about your opponent. And I think that was a sizing up moment. I think that the Inquisitor thought at the end he'd have it the way he wanted it to be. But with the work of the team, you know, trying to get, you know, have each other's back and get out of there, I think he wasn't really expecting that. And it ended, you know, poorly and not how he expected it. But getting back to Kanan's strength, I mean, there's that when he goes to save Ezra and he holds the Inquisitor up to the ceiling so Ezra can get away. I mean,
I don't think
the Inquisitor was expecting that at all.
Mm-hmm. No, wait. And I think that also you see the both power of both of these warriors, these, you know, they're very much like throwback to the days of the Clone Wars with these powerful warriors fighting against one another. And I do think also that the Inquisitor is probably holding back, like Mike said, to just sort of kind of measure up, size up his opponent to see what he's up against, even though he probably thinks he has a really good idea. And then when he's chasing after him, he's choosing to cut through all these blast doors instead of choosing the Force to unlock the mechanism and just kind of waltz right through, which is just a more exciting plot thing. You know, to see that red lightsaber go, and it almost cuts Zeb in half, and he kind of looks like, oh, what's going on here? Huh. You almost wonder if that's the first time a lot of them have ever seen a red lightsaber before.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, and there's also, I wanted to go back to Clone Wars. I mean, it took a lot of episodes of Clone Wars until somebody stuck a lightsaber into a door to get through it.
Yeah.
We see it in the, you know, in the prequels, but it took a while. And to be a couple episodes into Rebels and seeing somebody do that already, I thought that was pretty cool. I think just like Darth Maul, Darth Vader, the Emperor, mm-hmm. any kind of bad guy in any kind of Star Wars lore, I think that they just think things are going to go their way. They're very confident in themselves, and it's going to go this way. And you see it with Vader many times where he thinks he has everybody in his grasp, and they get away. And then he's frustrated, and he wants to force choke everybody.
Yes. And yeah, he's just got – there's just something a little bit different about him. And you mentioned Jason Isaacs. When we first heard some trailers earlier on in the year before we actually saw an episode of Rebels, I made the comment on the show that I thought that all I heard when the Inquisitor talked was Jason Isaacs. And I don't know if they tweaked the pitch or something of this recording of his voice or if I'm just looking at it through a different lens. But I didn't hear Jason Isaacs at all. I heard the Inquisitor. I heard ominous. I heard menace. I heard intelligence. I heard a lot of swagger. I completely agree. He was just absolutely amazing for this role.
You got to admit those glowing eyes really makes the look.
It was awesome. Well, how dark side is that, you know? And you mentioned the lightsaber. Do you guys like the lightsaber? Do you think it's cool? Do you think it's too much like Darth Maul and General Grievous's lightsabers had a baby? Or what do you think?
Yeah, it's like it's something out of something Darth Maul might have. And I felt it was a little more updated because they have the technology to do it. And the whole Tron feel of it was okay. I mean,
yeah, they call it a force disc if you see it in Toys R Us or Target or Walmart. So you just can assume that they're going to do something with that. I thought at first it was going to feel like a gimmick, like they're trying to see what else they can do to a lightsaber. Because we've seen a double-bladed red blade before, but there was something about this that I really thought was awesome.
Oh, and he brings it back to him after he throws it at Kanan, and Kanan blocks it away, and he brings it back. I know personally, if I was trying to catch something like that, I'd cut off both my hands. So he has some skill to catch it the right way. I like how it spun around. I think that adds a little bit to it. Mm-hmm. Maybe some people would think it's hokey, but wasn't it Savage Opress who first had the double blade lightsaber, and then Darth Maul ended up with it, and now we see the Inquisitor with the double blade?
Well, in the cartoons, yeah. I mean, if you go time-wise, episode one is when we first see it. And then, of course, the Vajra Press comes after that. But yeah, you're totally right.
Yeah, this is cartoons, not everything.
Right.
Right. I also like, before I forget to mention it, so you feel that inner struggle with Ezra feeling like Kanan's trying to pass him off onto somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then Kanan, you know, has the confidence in Ezra to together lift the gate up together. I thought that was a very powerful moment as well.
Yeah, the conversations between Ezra and Kanan as they're raising the hangar door, as well as at the end of the episode, you see this master Padawan / surrogate father and son relationship. And I found that to be really strong. Sometimes some of the things we've seen in Rebels so far seem a little bit like over the top push. Hey, this is a family dynamic. This is a family dynamic. And it's there. This, I felt like they just let the story tell it instead of trying to force it at you.
I sat there both times I watched it, and I thought the same thing, the father and son, the surrogate thing, and Obi-Wan and Anakin. And then I sat there and I thought, could we see Ezra go the same way? Because he's very very smart with what he says to Kanan, very, you know, back-talking. And, you know, you kind of see that relationship again.
What about you, Corey?
Definitely at the end of the episode, they kind of come full circle again and realize their roles. And of course, you know, he's tossing the proverbial baseball and hitting, you know, that whole back and forth game of catch that dads do, you know, with their sons type feeling. I got that feeling at the end there. And I felt like even like
it's go like back Star to, Wars Field of Dreams.
Yeah, that's good. He goes back to that do or do not try. And I felt like, you know, Kanan's really made a big step here because I didn't expect him to really pawn him off on Luminara, you know. I felt, oh, he won't do this in the moment. You know, they'll meet and he'll realize he has to take it on himself. But no, it was totally different than that. He was kind of like he had to realize on himself he had to do it and not just try to, you know, just do the best that he could. And you know, it was just really a nice relationship between those two characters. I think it's really going to come even stronger, too, as the season goes on.
Did either of you guys notice that what Chopper was throwing at Ezra in the beginning of the episode looked like bottles of Tums?
I thought it was like milk
little
jugs.
Milk cartons. Or, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It was definitely,
maybe
that was
they were
hilarious.
Blue milk jugs.
So the episode ends off, I think, in a great way where, you know, Kanan says, you know, I'm not going to try to teach you anymore. I'm not going to try to be your master. I'm going to do it. I'm just, you know, I have to have the confidence to do it. And then the line where he says, I may fail, you may fail, but there is no try. I thought that was a very strong ending to the
episode. That was tremendous and maybe the strongest explicit message we've seen in this short series so far. I love that part.
I think if there's anything that could be quoted so far, that would be it.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that as well as I'm about to let everybody in on a big secret.
Yeah.
That was good, too. And also, just real quickly, we finally get to see Sabine in real action.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely got it.
Yeah, she does. I think the whole team has something that they bring to the table. But I'm going to go back to Hera. I still think Hera is the strongest person we've come across so far.
I do, too. And it's just unfortunate we've seen the least from her.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's funny. I mean, maybe that's why. I mean, what we see of her is very strong, and it's not an overabundance of things. But I thought it was funny with the moth stingray kind of how to Toothless How to Train Your Dragon that were chasing her around because the frequency was like a mating frequency. I thought that was cool. And then when she came in, she says, "You know, we have our squadron," or whatever word she used. I thought that was fun too.
I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because Corey and I were talking about this before we started chatting with you. We thought there's definitely a lot of symbolism there. Where, I mean, she's literally the mother figure on the ghost, and then she becomes a mother to through nature symbolically, and she brings him to her. It reminded me very much of Return of the Jedi with the nature versus the technology aspect.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's just overall, I mean, I can't wait to see it again. I can't wait to watch. I didn't get to watch it with my daughter, so I can't wait to watch it a third time with her, see how she takes it.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Different generation, a different point of view, because her point of view of Star Wars is especially with Rebels and Clone Wars, is different than mine. And so I always like to see these things with her and hear what her theories are and how she perceives things. So I know that when she sees the Inquisitor, she's going to go through the ceiling.
Oh, she's going to love it. I can't wait to hear what she says about it.
I'll let you guys know for sure.
So, guys, real quick, if you could give this episode an overall grade, what letter grade would you give it?
I'd go a definite A+. I mean, it was totally full of just jokes and, you know, little winks of the series, and characters were built, and it was definitely on a, you know, this is basically like, this is our main storyline again. You know, here we go with what we're going to explore here as far as the Jedi path and the Inquisitor, and just it really got geared up, and this is to show us a lot about what the series, I think, at least this first season one, is going to be about.
I know that there's a lot to come, and I look forward to seeing it. I think that this is going to be the episode where the doubters or the people who weren't really on board with Rebels thus far, where this is going to start changing their opinions. For that, I would definitely give it an A+. I think that overall, compared to the other episodes, it's very, very, very strong. A+ again. But I'm kind of hopeful, and I'm kind of hoping that we look back at this episode and say, boy, that's where it really started. That was amazing. But we've seen some A++ episodes since.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it an A. I can't quite go A+ yet because it's too early. But I thought some of the
you're a teacher, so
yeah. True.
Milk.
But I
there's extra credit somewhere.
I
yeah.
loved it. I really enjoyed the Droids in Distress episode a lot too, for very, very different reasons. I'm glad we finally got to see the Inquisitor and we get to really step into the Jedi lore more, which is one of my very favorite aspects of Star Wars anyway. And seeing, we'll actually get to see more of Kanan, and there's some connections finally to him in A New Dawn. And because I always thought that A New Dawn showed how much he was sort of fighting his inner Jedi because he feared for his safety, right? And then we don't see that too much in the show. And then, you know, Rise of the Old Masters comes out, and then we really see it in full force and show that he is actually going to be the nuanced character that we were hoping for, as are all of these characters. So. Bravo, an amazing episode, one that people are going to be talking about for a long time. And Mike, how great is it to have you on, Mr. Darkseid Expert himself, and a member of the 501st, I might add.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Empire City Garrison, yeah, those guys are great.
Heck yeah, man, as are you, my friend. So where can listeners find you?
Well, you can go to FullSith.com and find out, find the entire library of the Full of Sith podcast. You can go to Mike.com and find all my contact information there. And I do want to just briefly say real quick that, yes, you're absolutely right. It was well worth them not showing us too much Kanan to get to this episode and then find out how strong Kanan can be.
Perfect. Well said, Mike. Well, thanks again. We look forward to having you on in the future for another cup of coffee. All right. Hey, Mike, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a great night.
We're running a 22 pickup.
Seriously?
22 pickup? Care to let me in on the secret?
Kid, I'm about to let everyone in on the secret.
This is Freddie Prinze Jr., voice of Kanan on Star Wars Rebels, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
We are thrilled to welcome Freddie Prinze Jr. to Coffee with Kenobi. Freddie is one of the stars of Star Wars Rebels and is the voice of Kanan Jarrus, one of the last surviving Jedi Knights. Freddie is no stranger to acting, as he has appeared in countless films and TV shows and has lent his voice talents to animation and video games. We are honored to share a cup of coffee with this talented new addition to the Star Wars family and to have him as our special guest on Coffee with Kenobi's Rebels Reactions. Welcome, Freddie.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hey, man. Thanks so much for agreeing to be on. We are thrilled to have you on, and we're just going to start right off the bat. The story of how you got involved with Rebels is already pretty legendary, and your enthusiasm and passion for Star Wars is one of those things that really resonates with us fans. So to you, what is it about Star Wars and its mythology that has enabled it to reach the pantheon of popular culture and storytelling?
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to blow smoke at Star Wars because it doesn't need that.
Right.
But every movie is Star Wars now. When that came out, that changed. It had a cultural effect. It didn't just make people want to dress up like Lord Vader and like Jedi Knights. It had a cultural effect on how movies were made, on how villains were portrayed, on how heroes were portrayed. I mean, it literally created the term, with Han Solo anyway, the reluctant hero. Like, that's an actual term that actors use. It's the hero that's like, yeah, all right, I'll save the universe. Or is Indiana Jones, yeah, okay, let me kill this guy. He doesn't want to, but he has to. It's the reluctant hero. And Luke is Alice in Wonderland, right? He's Neo. Everything is new and fresh. And, you know, these ideas that happened in Star Wars inspired, someone asked me if they thought Dave Filoni was inspired by Firefly. And that was so silly to me that they wouldn't say Firefly was inspired by Star Wars.
I agree.
Because it just didn't, two and two just weren't adding up to five. You know what I mean? So everything that works in the sci-fi world, I think, focuses on what worked in Star Wars, whether the writer, director, actors are conscious they're doing it or not. They're doing it if they're doing a good job. And if they're not, you can tell. So for me, is what it meant for me, you know, I was born in 1976. So Star Wars for me, I got to see on cable when there was actually a cable that connected to the remote. And if you pushed three buttons at the same time, you could get HBO and you would get sound, but only in black and white. And if you hit another three, you could get color, but no sound. And that's how you saw free movies back in the day. And I saw Star Wars in black and white for the very first time and was literally scared to death of Darth Vader. I thought he was awesome. In the same way I was scared to death of Andre the Giant and thought he was awesome.
A good comparison.
I mean, those were guys who literally, they weren't accountable for any of their actions. They literally did whatever they wanted because they could, which was like the ultimate bully, right? And so how do you beat that? And it took, you know, three movies to get it done, basically. So as far as epic villains go, I mean, yeah, man. If you count the second three, too, then it's even more movies. But for my generation, it took that long to get him. And that was the longest it ever took any movie ever to get the bad guy, because no one could ever spread it out over three that perfectly. So that's kind of what it meant for me. It was my introduction to how to make what makes a perfect villain and what makes a perfect hero. And the differences between Luke and Han were so significant, but they're fighting for the same thing. So it's just, you know, it's a perfect movie, but everybody knows that.
Well, it's like introducing people who see Star Wars for the first time to what the concept of a foil is when you look at the relationship between Luke and Han as well. And I like that you mentioned how long it takes to get Vader. I remember seeing A New Hope for the first time because you and I are pretty similar in age. And I remember being so surprised and confused that the bad guy got away.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's not supposed to happen. And that's what made the movie real. I mean, you got to understand, they just started doing that in TV in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like, they just started doing that literally 10 years ago. Like, bad guys would do well in like Breaking Bad. Bad guys would do, and they still had to pay a price. Bad guys would do well in 24. They still had to pay a price. It's very rare where you get to see someone pull that off and do it in a way that people are like, oh my God, that's so corny. But it's, you know, it's a different business today, a different industry, and studios think that fans want something different. And, you know, we agree and we disagree sometimes on that.
Absolutely. And very well said. And you know, it lends itself a lot to even the heroes too. And your fit into this new evolution, into this new series. You know, as this creative process evolved, what were your early conceptions of Kane? And you know, without giving too much away, what has changed over the time?
Well, I won't give anything away. You don't have to worry about that. You have to remember, and you guys are aware of this. I know you're asking the question for people listening.
Sure.
The relationship between a Padawan and their master is beyond father-son, father-daughter, mother-son, mother-daughter. There was an old Japanese movie series back in the day called Lone Wolf and Lone Wolf and Cub. Mm. And he was this samurai that literally carried this child on his back. And he was a ronin. He had no master. And he carried this child on his back. And anytime there was danger, he would never let the opposing samurai or the opposing ninja get behind him. His protection to the point of his death. Sorry to spoil the Lone Wolf and Cub storyline for you. But until his death, he literally sacrifices everything so that this boy has a chance to live and survive and carry on. And if you go to the original Star Wars and you look at the relationship between Obi-Wan and Luke, that's what that is. He gets to make the ultimate sacrifice so that Luke gets to live on. He dies a samurai's death. He literally almost puts the katana blade down. And we don't get Wakizashi's because Jedi only need one. Sith sometimes use two, but it's whatever. But the Wakizashi is the short sword for the think they know but don't. Anyway, he literally like puts down the katana to take that a willing, almost suicidal ritual Japanese like seppuku type thing, even though it's Vader doing it, so that Luke can live on. And so that, you know, I grew up watching a lot of, you know, Sunday Kung Fu theater and Japanese movies. So that relationship was very important to me as a kid, not having a father and growing up without one. So I unconsciously/consciously, as you become a better actor, brought that to a lot of roles that I did. Now it just happens to be the perfect time where I'm a father and I have children, and all of a sudden I'm given this teenager in a television series that's friggin' Star Wars. And it's my job to protect him and guide him and teach him. And if you guys saw the latest episode, not everyone has the DX app or the XDX. Sorry, wrestling nerd. XD app, the Disney XD app. Then you guys have seen, you know, just how much Ezra means to Kanan. Mm-hmm. And it's not a spoiler because they have released it on XD. But when he has this fight with the Inquisitor, you don't really see Kanan have success in this fight until Ezra's in major trouble. And the moment you do, you see him force lift this fool like you've never seen him move anything to date. So the propensity for him, you guys called him a Jedi Knight. And, you know, at this point, I don't know if I'm comfortable calling him that simply because his training was incomplete with his master.
Yes.
So a lot of this is beyond on the job. It's almost like when Roy Jones Jr. hit the boxing scene and he was so unorthodox, it just worked. That's Kanan. He's so unorthodox, he doesn't follow all the rules. And when he does, he gets called on it. When he uses his close quarters technique that his master taught him, he gets called on it. It's not until all bets are off and all technique is out the window and the stakes are at their highest that you really see, oh my God, he can actually be a Jedi Knight. He actually can live up to this. But remember, she was taken from him at a young age and his training was left incomplete. So to call him a knight is awesome. Like my personal ego loves that, but I don't know if we're there yet. I don't know if we're there yet, but he definitely can hold his own.
Fair enough. And I was actually wondering that too, because he's called master and I'm thinking, well, he's not really a Jedi master. He's even a Jedi knight, but technically he is training someone, but that doesn't make him a
master.
And
that's going to be the struggle that you see Kanan deal with is he has to, he's in a position where he has no choice. I mean, you always have a choice, but for what he's been through, what he's dealt with, and what Hera's expectations are to bring this young boy in, because she sees something in Ezra that she saw in Kanan. And you can tell if you've watched carefully to her reactions to the boy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's kind of put in this position where he's going to be called a title that he doesn't feel deserving of. And you'll see a Jedi's insecurities come to light. And we know where insecurities and fear lead us. So Kanan has to be uber self-aware, because anytime he screws up, the writers are so smart, he really does pay for it.
Yeah. And even just like the non-verbal, just like you said, Hera's expressions too, just when she's looking at Ezra, especially when Ezra's talking to Kanan.
Yeah, man. I mean, they do such an amazing job. Like when you watch Zeb and him argue and you see Zeb's reactions to Ezra constantly saying, you know, I saved your life. Don't forget. Hey, all right. Like, I mean, he doesn't even have to have a line, but Steve Bloom, so you want to give him every line because he's so sick.
Well, you're doing such an amazing job of like the lone wolf and cub thing. I love that. I never thought about that connection. That makes perfect sense. When you're sitting around with Dave and company and you're making these, do these references come up when you're looking at the scripts, when you're talking?
Sometimes, you know, sometimes he laughs at me when I bring stuff up that even he's not aware of, and not in the Star Wars world because he's aware of everything. But when I make references that are, I feel, direct connections to Star Wars, in a time where Star Wars didn't even exist yet, characters similar to the Jedi did, and it was only in these samurai movies. Like the old spaghetti westerns, the Sergio Leones.
Yeah.
It's just not the same thing. It's more a libertarian vibe, and Jedi are not libertarian.
Far from it, yeah.
Yeah, they are uber sacrificial lambs to the point where it's a fault almost. Although they would never say that.
Right. And they almost get away from it in the prequels. Yeah.
Mandalorians would say that they're screwing up their lives, but whatever. But yeah, man, that comparison for me, and look, Dave and I are both recovering World of Warcraft addicts, so we even make random Warcraft references when we can. But for the most part, you see who Kanan is, you know what they want. I know what y'all want out of him. So I even will say sometimes, I'll look at a line and go, you want Han Solo. And I'm not even supposed to say that to you guys, but I know it. They know it. Y'all know it. So I'll just say it. And Dave just laughs. He's like, yeah, man, give me some hot. And I grew up thinking he was the man. You know what I mean? So that's.
He's like a hybrid of
Han. He is. Yeah. He's kind of a mix between a very sort of deep, soulful Jedi and this sort of, you know what, man? I'm going to use these Jedi tricks to my advantage since I can't let anyone know I'm a Jedi. And so he's a little bit on the shady side. He does black market stuff, mercenary stuff, you know, and they're very open about it in the show, which is very cool, impressive to me. If you watched the last one when we were doing press originally, I talked about how you actually get to see what the Empire did to people, whereas you've never really gotten to witness that before. You just saw the after effects. I mean, they're blowing up guys' farms just because they don't want to sell them their land. So they're like, okay, we'll just kill everybody and take it. I mean, that's straight up Nazi Germany stuff, right? Mm-hmm. There.
Yes.
It's another great sort of Star Wars reference. If you look at the friggin' stormtrooper helmets. But, you know, that's the type of stuff they're doing. And it's raw and it's emotional. I watched with my daughter. She goes, Dada, why did they blow up his farm? Like, kids know, man. Huh. They know it's horrible. And I said, don't worry, Zeb and Ezra are on the way. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
That's what the rebels do.
Well, and also, I don't even know if this is ever going to come up. And again, we're the opposite of a spoiler podcast. We just like enjoying what's going on and analyzing it through a critical lens. But I'm sort of thinking, when you mention these comparisons, he's as much like a version of Qui-Gon Jinn as anything. It would be cool to see if ever we found out that those two had a bunch of interactions with one another. Probably not age-wise.
Don't tease me with Qui-Gon, man.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah, man, any Jedi that sacrificed himself is always sort of one of my all-time faves, man. Anyone who died in glory is always one of my faves. The ones that lived, I'm like, yeah, right on. But it's the one that dies, the ones that die that break your heart, man. That would be great. But Kanan has not. I can end any spoiler either way and tell you straight up, I haven't spoken to Qui-Gon lately at all.
Very good. You know, as we've seen these episodes kind of go on, and the stylings of Rebels is a little bit different than the Clone Wars. You know, people are kind of coming off of that, and you know, the Series 6, And, you know, as far as the designs and the layout and just the artwork and stuff, it's incredible stuff. The guys there in the production is just value is just so high. So when you first, you know, saw Kane and his armor and his outfit and things like that, what was your reaction when you saw that?
You know, the simple, quick answer is, oh, my God, I'm a Jedi. you know, that was the easy part. But when we set up these episodes, Dave is describing and, when available, showing us animation of the worlds, the environments that we're going to be in, the environment that we were going to be in for season two, how different it was going to look from season one, you know, what the ship's interiors look like. You know, I like a lot of, you know, old foreign films, and there was this great German movie called Das Boot, and he was very familiar with that mm-hmm. terminology and the way it sort of looked inside that submarine. And the ghost kind of has a similar feel, although we don't have to duck through our doorways like yeah. we would on a submarine. You know, in the future, we've actually evolved a bit and make ships that people fit in. But yeah, man, I mean, as far as the art goes, I can't draw a straight line. So I just sort of sit back in amazement anytime we come in and loop and re-record and you're seeing, you know, your character's face move in a way that you'd move. Like, Kanan smirks like a jerk the way I do. My wife always goes, you're like such a jerk when you smile. And they gave Kanan that same smile, man. So it's a lot of fun. It's very humbling and it's a trip at times. But we got a group of people in there. And when you work with me and Steve, you have no choice but to be willing to look dumb, because he and I don't care how dumb we look. We just sort of go for it and go as hard as we can, as balls out as we can for 6 hours, and just see what happens. And so everybody else sort of just jumps on that train and goes for it. And they really just go for it. So the animation is helpful, but we don't always get the picture you see until looping. A lot of times it's just Dave describing this world to us, and then we just have to jump in.
Well, also, I mean, it's you can feel it. Like when you're watching Rebels, you don't sit there and think, you don't picture you guys sitting in a booth. You just feel like these characters are coming to life because you're just putting your heart and soul into it. And it definitely shows in the storytelling.
Brother, we're in there at the same time. That's honestly, that's one of the main reasons you guys feel that. Almost, I've never done any video game session that was more than just me in a booth. Hmm. And when we do Rebels, it's all of us. Almost every time. Like sometimes guest cast schedules don't work out with ours and they have to record separately. Or if it's, you know, a couple lines, they're not going to ask somebody to wait 6 hours while we do a show and they have to say, you there, halt. But when we're in there, I mean, it's literally, we record the way they shot Breakfast Club in order sequentially. We let the moments happen naturally, organically. We've kind of had a half hour to an hour conversation with Dave beforehand on how the whole sort of episode flows together and how it connects with the rest of the history that we're so entwined with. So when we go, we just sort of go, man, and we try different things. And you know, just last week, I wanted to pitch in something real weird, that I thought would be writing character with Kanan, but something that we hadn't really seen yet. And Dave was like, yeah, go for it. And we tried it. He was like, honestly, you don't even need to do another one. He's like, that's perfect. That's what I want to do. And so, you know, when you're in that kind of a workspace, great things come out. Like they'll literally just tell Steve, like, yeah, say whatever you want. And he'll just do a whole take where he's like, never again, I'll kill you. And, you know, he's doing the same thing. And if you watch the episode, then, you know, it's just a one take move from the guy. You know, he's money. So it's a very collaborative process.
That's fascinating. I love this. So, yeah. And you've sort of addressed this a little bit so far. I'm just curious if you have anything else to add. But we've seen 4 episodes and we've seen Kanan with leadership abilities. He's got inner strength and he's obviously capable of leading a family unit. So what kind of inner conflicts do you think he struggles with the most? I mean, you talked about this notion of pedagogically, what kind of teacher is he going to be for Ezra? But what do you think he really struggles with? Because he seems pretty calm and cool under pressure.
You know, I don't think action is something that bothers him. I think he's seen things that Vietnam veterans have seen. And so at that point, nothing's really going to surprise you. And he saw it at a younger age than a Vietnam veteran would see it, except my uncle, who enlisted at 15 because he was crazy. He's also the toughest man I ever knew in my life. But so, you know, you're not going to, he's going to be James Bond under pressure. You know, I remember that first Pierce Brosnan one. And that even in the trailer, he's like sitting behind this girder and they're shooting bullets at him while he's reloading. And a bullet hits like right next to his face and he barely even flinches. It's almost like an annoyance while he reloads the gun. And that's Kanan all the way. Like, he doesn't care about that stuff. You see him in the pilot, jump out, dodge the bullets, bring out the saber after he's dodging bullets, and then starts reflecting the shots back. So that stuff doesn't trip him out. I think as you see his backstory sort of revealed, and they do this very slowly and subtly, and in season one, you get more information. Honestly, pay attention to Hera and how she deals with me more than what Kanan's saying. Because Kanan's covering. He's going to cover that insecurity. It's not a happy thing. My Uncle Jim didn't want to talk about the horrible things he had to do as a reconnaissance marine. I mean, if you're a reconnaissance marine, you were recruited by the CIA. And if anybody saw you on your mission, they had to die. And it didn't matter if they were an old man, a kid, a woman, or anything. Because the guy before you who let that kid live and kept going on their mission, that kid went and told the VC, and then that reconnaissance marine died, and that's why you're there. At least that's the story they tell, right? So they've seen things that are worst case scenario. So I can't see Kanan getting rattled in anything other than his past or this new responsibility that he's never had. Tell a 15-year-old, if you're a girl, tell your 15-year-old boyfriend you're pregnant, just for fun. And watch the reaction that he has. And that's what Kanan has to deal with. You know what I mean? It's like, it's literally, he's given a son and he's not equipped for it. He's given a Padawan and he's not equipped for it. So it's a very serious thing. He's going to BS it sometimes. You're going to hear him say things that you've heard, you know, other great Jedi say, and you're not going to know if he really believes it or if he's like, look, somebody told me. And he's going to have moments like that where he's like, okay, look, I've never done this before, so we're just going to do it together. And the way he sort of self-deprecates it makes it okay, at least with Ezra. There's going to be times where Ezra's pubescence is a serious problem in an Anakin way, where you're young, you're a teenager, you have hormones, and you're angry. Your parents were taken away, and now you have this power where you can actually have revenge and re-empower your ego. That's every teenager's friggin' dream. So I have to walk him and talk him through that as well. And again, these aren't spoilers. These are things that any young Jedi would deal with. So, you know, those are, I think, are the things that Kanan is going to struggle with.
Well said. And I mean, I teach high school, and three of my sections are freshmen for literature. And you see that kind of stuff. It always kind of got to me when people critiqued Jake Lloyd or Mark Hamill as far as how they act when they're teenagers. That's how teenagers act. That's pretty realistic.
Really, have you got a problem with Mark Hamill's work? Just watch him in The Big Red One, where he plays a soldier in World War II. You'll change your tune real quick. He's friggin' amazing.
Exactly. That's what verisimilitude that these shows, they're wrapped in fun and space science fiction fantasy, but there's a lot going on there with people who understand the human condition.
Yeah, man. And if Luke doesn't behave immaturely, he's John McClane, and that would suck in Star Wars. Who wants to see Yippee-ki-yay? Like, you don't want to see that. You want Luke frustrated. They make him work three movies to get the kill, man. Like, it's the ultimate earned respect. That's why Luke will forever be everyone's favorite. That's why a woman has changed her name to Linda Skywalker. You know what I mean? It's like he's permanently ingrained because he had to work harder than John. John McClane's gotten four movies. But it's the same movie. He always gets the bad guy. Luke had to struggle, man. He has to climb the mountain. The boulder keeps going down and it keeps going up, but he finally makes it. So that's why he's always going to be the most special.
Yeah, becoming's way more interesting than being.
Yeah, man.
So, Freddie, being a father yourself, how would you relate Kane's relationship with Ezra? Is it more of a father figure, big brother, mentor? How do you go with that?
Sorry for the dead air. I'm
it's okay.
Trying to construct this properly without giving stuff away.
Oh, sure.
You know, season one, it's going to be more a big brother type relationship because that's the easiest type relationship. It quickly, and within season one, some events happen where it becomes paternal and not fraternal real quick, and everyone will know why as soon as they see it. And it's not in the one that you just watched. I mean, that's that first moment where you see what Kanan's, that he's actually quite capable, and it's more than just, you know, a Padawan who's pretty good with a gun. You actually sort of see his force potential, but very soon you'll see this paternal element where he starts to believe, yeah, okay, I can be a teacher. I have something to give.
Nice.
Sorry for being so cryptic. That's
no, that's awesome.
No, it doesn't. That's, I mean, I we here at Coffee with Kenobi like questions more than answers anyway. So that's perfect. That's the great thing about Star Wars, is all that debate. And speaking of debate, I suppose it could be a little curmudgeonly, the opinion I have on this question I'm about to ask you, but so many people are just going crazy about this potential relationship between Kanan and Hera. I don't really see it as a they're going to do a will they, won't they kind of thing, because I think this is so much more than that. But how would you describe the relationship between those two?
I wouldn't look at it as a will they, won't they. I would look at it as they already have, and now they're in wartime, and there's something a lot more important than their relationship at stake. They love each other completely. They trust each other completely. She knows every single thing about him, his history, his past. He's that one girl you cried to who finally earned your trust, right? The girl you drug through the ringer to make sure you told girls you love them, right? But you never told a girl, I trust you, except that one. And yet you made him earn it because none of those other girls deserved it. They burned you, right? So she's that one. So it's not a question of, it's not Scully Mulder, man. It's not that.
Okay.
You know, please, thank one goodness. Day. They already have. They have a relationship. They've been together. They have love for one another, but they're getting hunted by the scariest dude in the universe. So it's, you know, and now that everybody knows that secret, it actually is the scariest dude in the universe. So, you know, there's not a lot of time for, oh my God, I love you so much. It's not, you know, it's not a BioWare storyline. It's Star Wars.
I love how well-rounded you are and all the things that everybody's passionate about.
Thanks,
that's,
man.
That's great.
I like what I like. You guys just happen to like the same crap.
Exactly. So one of the strengths of Rebels early on is how the stories lend themselves to conversation about very serious themes. In the episode Droids in Distress, Kanan tries to assuage Zeb that selling an IO-7 ion or a T-7 ion disruptor can be a positive thing, even though the Empire used them to take over Lassan. How did you interpret that moment, and what does it show us about these characters and their situation?
You know, as far as the Jedi philosophy on it, and again, my godfather's Bob Wall. He's a guy that trained Bruce when Bruce Lee came to America. Oh. So I was kind of raised on a more philosophical tip than a religious tip, and that sort of the Zen philosophy, I feel, is very close to the Jedi philosophy, which is live in the moment. Don't focus on the past. Don't focus on the future, or you won't be able to accomplish the task at hand. And that's a philosophy that Al-Assad just isn't going to get after he's seen his entire, you know, basically his entire race butchered in front of him. So, you know, that's opposing forces. That's what's another way to, like, Cyclops and Wolverine. You know what I mean? Like, there's just certain things they're not going to agree on. And I'm not talking about Jean Grey. Like, there's certain things where I'm doing it this way, you're doing it that way, and that's the way it's going to be. Zeb follows orders, but you see he's an emotional guy, and he's winning that fight until he allows Kallus to sort of get under his skin. And it's when he realizes this guy directly is responsible for the annihilation of for genocide, basically.
Yeah.
It's emotion and rage take over, and he's that fighter who's too aggressive and he gets KO'd. You know what I mean? It's how Ali beat George Foreman in Zaire. It's he's goading him. You hit like a girl. My mama hits harder than you. And he's taking this beating, right? Kallus is taking a whoop, and he's getting hit by Al-Assad. It's not like he's getting hit by a human. He's taking a whooping, and it's finally, and he finally gets under his skin, and George starts throwing those wide punches instead of that jab and that right hand. And that's when Ali clowns him and just takes him out so fast. George didn't know he was knocked out. He asked if he won when the fight was over. that's what happens. This guy gets in Zeb's head. Zeb is an anger-driven alpha male, testosterone. You know, if he played in the MLB, he'd probably take steroids. He's that beast, man. Like, he's all alpha all the way. So once he sees red, forget about it, man. He's a bull, and he's not going to stop until he's stopped or that guy's dead. And Kanan's not even stopping him. You know what I mean? I'm there picking up the pieces after Ezra saves him.
And you still see that. And even in spite of all that, you see that incredible respect that everyone has for Kanan. And Kanan, it just kind of looks at him with, look, I know you're upset about the genocide thing, and rightfully so, but let's just trust me that this is for a greater good. And it's a controversial decision.
Is Kanan being dismissive with him? Yeah, you could read it that way, and Zeb could take it that way, but he doesn't. So I don't feel that people should. But it definitely is up for debate. But for Kanan, it's big picture. If we don't have credits, we don't get to do anything good because we don't have fuel, we don't have food, we can't fight, we can't do anything. So in this mercenary world that they're living in, the ends justify the means.
And
the
really
means justify the ends, rather.
You bet. And
yeah, Willy Wonka moment. Reverse that.
And what better thing for a teacher to do, or a parental figure to say, hey, let's take something bad and make something good out of it.
I mean, that's what he's trying to sell him, right? But Zeb's not buying that. And you'll see later on, he still is not buying that. His time with Kallus is not over by a long shot. So
I can't wait.
You know, it's going to be a problem, and it's going to be a nice backstory and present and future story for Zeb as it expands throughout, you know, the first season. And people are really going to get a good look at what makes Zeb tick. And our actor playing Kallus David is just, we have like 8 Davids on the show, but I'm not going to mispronounce his last name.
Hiello, is that it?
Yeah, but David's the man, and his performance is so cold and chilling and unfeeling. And then when he wants to turn on that passion and just dig that salt in the wound, he just, maybe because he's British and they're just better at doing that. but man, I was, you know, like I said, we filmed together, so record together. So I was there when they did the scene, and I had chills.
Oh man, to be a fly on the wall in that studio.
I'm telling you, man, it's, we got guys that'll come in for a couple lines, and some of them, they're not necessarily Star Wars fans, and they don't even know what they're missing. Like a guy, I won't say his name because I don't want to blow him up, but he asked if he could leave, like after he did his line. And I was like, wow, he doesn't even, if he would have stayed, they didn't give him the whole script, but if he would have stayed, he would have seen like Cameo Central, man. Like it would, we have one episode where people are going to be like, what? And that was the one that he missed.
Well, we can promise you that when Dave calls us on the bad phone, we won't leave early.
Yeah.
Oh man, you trust me, man. It's, those episodes, I've said this before, but you know, they read like a radio show. Like it's not an experiment in process. Like our scripts are you have to work hard to screw them up, man. You have to really not care about what you're doing to do a bad job. It's so well laid out. I wish we could I wish it was the 30s and we were like broadcasting over the radio in Chicago or something in there. It was, you know, in the freezing snow and people could circle around the radio and listen, because it feels like that when we do it. But kids are listening to this right now going, wait, what? What happened over 30? I'm telling you, man, it would be such a cool vibe if it was just like an audio show with sound effects and everything. You know what I mean? But that would just be a real fun thing.
Speaking of, you know, new characters, we get to see the Inquisitor in the episode Rise of the Old Masters. And we probably get to see him in action, and we get to see, you know, Kanan show off all his, you know, lightsaber prowess and force abilities. And you know, the title itself, to me, when I first read that, it was just a really great title. I loved it. You know, went right in with, you know, Return of the Jedi or Empire Strikes Back. And, you know, mentions the old masters. And I'm curious to know, who are these old masters the title's referring to? And how do we see Kanan assume this mantle of a master?
It's not going to happen fast as far as Kanan taking this mantle. They don't do anything fast. They really allow stories to play themselves out. All our episodes, like Clone Wars, are character driven, not explosion or obstacle driven. As far as the old masters, look, I can't say all of them, but you know, Luminara, we know, so we can discuss Luminara now, I guess, right?
Sure,
everybody
sure.
knows about Luminara, so you know, I consider her a master, and all I can say is there are some that will be rising that are even greater than she.
Very good, very good.
But as far as the Inquisitor stuff goes, I mean, that's that scene I was talking about. Like, the guy knows I'm not who this kid thinks I am, and he knows it in less than 5 seconds, just on my technique, just on me relying more on muscle and on passion and will. Like, if you watch how we did that, I mean, he doesn't make any exertion at all in that fight. And when Dave and I were talking about it, you know, it was Kanan needs to be giving it everything he's got. So when you see that, I mean, I'm full on, you know, and just going at it. And the Inquisitor's breathing through his nose, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. And continues to do so. So you really kind of get a sense of, okay, this guy just got this handed to him. He's got to learn, and he's got to learn quick. Oh, yeah, and he's got this kid to protect and teach at the same time. So that's where that moment is what's going to cause a lot of the insecurity that we were discussing earlier.
Absolutely, and I know you follow professional wrestling. I know you follow MMA fighting and stuff like that, and you obviously have a background in some of that stuff and enjoy, you know, taking that in. How much of that did you put into Kanan in this battle scene?
I mean, it's... They're asking for very specific things. Your voice is thrashed usually at the end of a session, whether you're yelling and screaming or not. Mm-hmm. But as far as like the lightsaber things go, I mean, I'm sure they'll show it on video when they release a DVD because they record us. I just pretend I have a lightsaber and I fight. That seems to be the most real way to do it. We do what's called a sound palette or a sound plate, something like that, where we're doing all kinds of different exertions. Like, here's a grunt with a jump. You're jumping 5 feet. You're jumping 10 feet. You're using the force and jumping for, you know, all these. You're getting hit by Zeb. You're getting hit by Ezra. You're getting hit by Hera. And all those reactions are in there, so they just have them at a moment's notice. But those fight sequences we do, that's all very specific. You know, Dave's telling me exactly how many, you know, this is a block and 3 swings. You know, he's going to jump over you and kick you in the back, so I want the wind knocked out of you. Like, it's that specific. Like, our animatic is approved, and then we're getting our script. So he knows exactly what's going to happen. It's not me just going, ha, 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 take this, bang, boom, blam, blam, you're dead. Oh, you missed. It's not like that. It's, here's exactly what's happening in the fight, and here's what we need from you to you know, bring vocal life into it.
It's not like you're doing an old
lightsaber fights are so sick. If I didn't make one sound, yeah, it would be all good, man.
I love that. Well, and also, how often have we seen a Jedi use a force pull to do a double clothesline? That was awesome.
Yeah, man, that was way WWE.
Very much.
That was my favorite. They released this trailer where it was like, you know, this season on Star Wars Rebels. And I saw that shot, and I literally must have just rewound it and froze it, took screenshots of it, like at different positions as they're incoming, on contact, as they're doing the Home Alone, head over heels fall, like, you know, the whole thing, and just loving every second of it, because I've never gotten to see that. I love when he just, you know, lands, and it's like perfect posture, and hands out, and both guys smash into the wall, like, all that stuff. It's just, it's nerd porn, man, you know what I mean? I can't get enough.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of the beginning of Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I mean, obviously, Kanan's got a little more, I'm a little more impressed, you know, with myself sort of thing. But just that slickness, just sliding in there and just laying waste to people.
Yeah, but Chris did a great job with that, too. He plays it real subtle. But even in that opening scene where he's like on your left, like the sixth time, it's he knows it's bothering the dude and he's sticking it to him a little bit.
Yeah,
he's just doing it in a slick, nice, subtle way where if you watch on TV, it's not as present because he's a film actor, you know what I mean? So he does things smaller, like Meryl Streep. And by the way, Meryl Streep is an acting god, and I'm not saying he's as good as Meryl Streep, but I like Chris Evans and think he's a good actor.
Yeah.
And what he did with that was very subtle and slick and sharp. So I can definitely see that comparison. And I think we want some of our heroes to be cocky.
Yes.
I love Michael Keaton as Batman because he talked trash. I almost said it a naughty word. I don't know how you guys feel about that. But, you know, he wasn't so, listen, everything's the most intense moment of my life. Like, it wasn't like that. He was Michael Keaton. He was Beetlejuice. He brought style to it. You know what I mean? And I miss that. I miss some cockiness out of Batman. He has no superpowers and can kick ass. Like you'd be cocky too, man. All these other guys need fight and super speed or wings like a hawk and a stupid hammer. Or you're a Martian named Jahan, or however you say it. You get all these guys with all these special. Shazam is like a 12-year-old who can be a superhero. That's every kid's perfect fantasy. And the Batman just worked harder than everyone else. You know what I'm saying? Like, he should get to talk some trash. My grandfather used to say, it ain't bragging if you've done it. Like, Batman's done it. You should be allowed to talk trash.
Exactly. This is a quick random aside, but have you seen trailers for Keaton's new film?
Birdman?
I actually hate seeing trailers because ever want to know anything about something I want to see. I happen to see this because my buddy was like, look, I know you love Michael Keaton. I know you hate trailers, but you need to see this because you never go to the movies anymore. And this is a movie you need to see. And I saw the trailer for it and literally was like, fell backwards in my seat. I was like, oh my God, he's going to get to make a movie now all over. I love Michael Keaton. I think he's great. I think he's absolutely great.
I remember him clean and sober before Batman even came out.
Oh my gosh, man. Of course. I mean, look, every role he's done from full on drama where he has a brain tumor and so he's going to make videos for his soon to be. So, by the way, for me, a guy without a father, to watch that movie and not know the trailer because I won't watch trailers, that was a stupid mistake. you've never seen a grown man cry like that before. But from that to like movies that nobody saw, like Multiplicity, because I think it came out the same day as the finals for the 100 meter dash in the summer game. But his performance in that is incredible, man. He's playing four roles.
I you know what? I am right with you on that, the father thing, because I had a similar upbringing as far as that goes. And when I saw that, that hit me really, really hard too. So that's like, and you have kids, right? Do you have a daughter and a son, or do you?
I have two children. That scene where he's teaching them how to make spaghetti and he's doing it the right way. And then he goes, now here's spaghetti in college. And he just breaks it in half and throws it in the pot. Like, oh my God, the tears, man. The best. Tears.
Well, when we had our little boy, he's 16 months old now, the first thing my wife did was she looked at me and she said, you have a son. And then it just hit me like randomly, like all the stuff that I didn't have with my dad, I got to have with my son. So this is talk about a random thing on a Star Wars podcast, but I totally hear what you're getting at, man.
There's nothing wrong with talking about fatherhood and Star Wars at the same time. I mean, that's something that isn't only a theme in the films itself. It's something that fathers share with their children over the years, or father figures share with their children and say, yeah, I know you like this one, but wait till you see this one. You know what I mean? So that theme is Star Wars all the way. People may not think it's cool and nerdy enough for us to talk about, but it's directly connected and it's awesome.
Exactly. Amen, brother. So we've heard a lot of discussion about the story group, particularly in regards to Kanan's characterization. We know that A New Dawn laid the groundwork. We know that Greg Weisman will be adding more background with the upcoming comic book series, and the Rebels animated series paints a large canvas. So how do you as an actor focus your portrayal of the character when there are so many different artists involved?
Yeah, I trust in Filoni. That's my
should be a t-shirt
that I wake up to. So it's tricky. We started recording before there was ever a copy of A New Dawn available for me to read. So that was not an option. Vanessa got it around like episode 4 or 5 and read it in like a day. But she's also read every single Star Wars book, paper, or tweet that's ever been written in the history. Can't keep up with her. I since haven't read A New Dawn because, you know, the relationship between an actor and a director is a real, real wonderful, special thing, or it sucks. And it's all based on trust. And, you know, Dave calls me his Padawan and I guess calls himself my master. That sucks, but whatever. But, you know, as far as like who this guy is, I feel like he and I know exactly who Kanan is. Greg Weisman was involved in the beginning of this show and was involved in every single one of those initial conversations. So he's privy to everything that turned me on, everything that turned Dave on, and everything that he put in the conversation that Dave and I fell in love with. So as far as the last Padawan goes, I have zero reservations or questions as to who that Kanan will be, because that's like a dream. Like, he already knows the final product, and now he gets to shape the world that created that statue, so to speak. Whereas with A New Dawn, I don't even know if I can read it until we're between seasons, because I don't want anything else jumping in my brain that Dave and I haven't sort of discussed and are applying directly to that week's episode. You know, I really have to pay attention to our current present history. And, you know, there could even be something, a line that Kanan says in a book that we may feel at this point in his Jedi life would be nothing that would come out of his mouth. So I have to be very, very careful with that. And it's not out of laziness. Believe me, Dave and I, we put in time and thought, and I'm sending him so many texts and so many questions that it annoys him. And he literally will be like, let's talk about it Wednesday. but he will. We'll always get around to talking about it. So it's, you know, Dave and I think, have a very strong grasp on who he is and where he's going.
Well, yeah, that's the opposite of lazy. That's like, that's being an expert in your craft.
Well, it could be perceived as like, oh, I didn't want to read the book. I remember when they asked Mickey Rourke if he got familiar with his character in Iron Man 2, and he's like, nah, I don't want it to distract me. And, you know, it's just because he's Mickey Rourke, and he's like, man, give me my check.
He's just working on that Russian accent.
I know how to act. I don't need help. Get out of here.
Give me this bird. Let's do this.
Exactly. Where's my Russian girlfriend? There's the other one.
So, Freddie, you know, Star Wars is huge. Obviously, it's big in your life. You've grown up with it. How does it feel to be an integral part of this universe, this saga? I mean, obviously, it's everybody's fanboy's dream come true. How is it for you?
You know, there's days where it's the dream come true, and there's days where there's a lot of pressure, and, you know, you don't want to screw up. You know, there's scenes that I read where I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I get to do this. And there's scenes where I read and I have to stop what I'm reading and start over and say, okay, I don't get to read the rest of the script until I figure out exactly what I'm doing here, because this is directly connected to this Star Wars, that Star Wars, this guy, that girl. And if I don't go in there with a perfect, you know, performance, or at least a perfect question to figure out how to get there, then it's going to suck. And Star Wars isn't allowed to suck, period, as far as I'm concerned. So I take it real, real seriously. And then there's other scenes where it's impossible to take it seriously because it's the coolest scene you've ever read in your life. And you just sort of mark out for it.
Well, and there's just a really cool thing about, you know, different actors, you know, God love them for whatever their reasons are, but not everyone embraces every role and they just kind of cast it aside. But people like you and Vanessa Marshall and the rest of the cast of Rebels, it's just great to see real fans putting their own stamp on Star Wars, and it's just a great reflection of what Star Wars means to people.
Yeah, and I feel you guys on that. I mean, I get like that with video games. I don't like when people who don't really play or know what they're doing are getting those jobs. But you got to remember, like, voice actors got to eat too. They got bills too, and the people hiring them. You know, if you get hired for Star Wars, you're not going to say no. You know what I mean? Like, if you get hired for a Call of Duty game, I don't know, a lot of guys would be like, nah, that's not really my thing. It's not a very successful game. So, you know, it's one of those things where they're hiring him because they think their performance was money. They're not going into, do they genuinely appreciate, you know, what they're a part of all the time. Now, sometimes that's a part of the equation, but not all the time. So, I'll say with our show, you know, Taylor's young, man. Like, he wasn't hip to everything in Star Wars, but he treats it with respect, and he treats it with the same respect he treats, you know, movie roles that he's booked. He treats it with the same respect, you know, for auditions that I know he wants to book. So I know his level of commitment and his work effort. He just, you know, I'm 38, he's 21. I have a lot more time with Star Wars than he does. So, you know, people kind of gave him a hard time or like, you don't know it as well as Freddie. It's like, yo, he doesn't know jujitsu as well as me either. He hasn't been doing it as long. Give the guy a break. He's training. He'll choke you out pretty soon. but you know, so, and I know at Comic-Con, Tia was so nervous. I mean, she didn't even know there was an entire like society of Mandalorians out there. Like she wasn't aware of that. She just knew there were a lot of Star Wars fans. And so for her to be in that line of Cassus Fett or Boba Fett or Pre Vizsla or anybody you want, those characters have touched people's lives in such a huge way that until Comic-Con was over, I don't think she had a full understanding. And you can't appreciate something until you understand it. And a full appreciation of just what it meant. And now, like, she's Mando all the way. She's great, man. She has, like, on your iPad notes, she puts in, like, little Mando words that she learns from, you know, fan senator texts and messages and stuff.
See, and that's real. And, like, when that one guy asked her in one of those panels at Comic-Con, you know, and questioned her Star Wars fandom, that kind of stuff, there's just no place for that.
You know what, though? I get it.
And you probably can't say that, but I will.
No, you can, but hear me out. It's one of those things where, like,
well, you know, people seem
like
to
this.
Think
– like on Twitter. I just realized this on Twitter. I played D&D when I was a kid, and there's some people who do, like, role-playing on Twitter, right? And they wanted to like, do a role-play Star Wars Rebels session. And some of them were members from the Rebels show, but they were still Jedi. I was like, yeah, I'll talk some Jedi trash with these guys. And I had a fun time with them. I did like 20 different tweets with them. And it literally felt like Dungeons and Dragons. I thought I was 16 all over again. And then this girl, I guess, sent me some message. And this will let people know, like, I try to read tweets. I try to get to them when I can. Just understand I'm a part-time actor or a full-time dad. So I'm not always on a thing. But this girl sent me a message. She was like, hey, these guys wouldn't let me. They wouldn't let me role play with them. And they talk trash. They said, I have to be able to have like a 10-line role play with you before they'd even consider me. And it got me kind of mad because I don't like anybody getting left out. But when someone that you think is cool embraces something that everyone else has crapped on, you kind of want to hold on to it and not let anybody else have it. And that's how Star Wars is for a lot of people. Like, a lot of people are like, who is this person to come into this thing that has meant so much to my life and it doesn't mean as much to them? They want to see you earn it. They want to see you invest energy and passion. And that's not 100% reasonable, but it's understandable. And you should see effort from the people that are booking these, what fans feel are very special roles. So I get it from that point. But to your point, that guy was just a jerk.
Yeah.
But other people, you know, I think have a legitimate reason. He just wanted to be on TV. He wanted to be on the internet. He wanted to be famous. So he tried to say something that would, you know, give him 5 minutes, and he thought he could crap on Tia and he couldn't. But, you know, there's other people who are, you know, they genuinely care and love this, and they just want to know that you care a little. Meet them halfway. You know what I'm saying? And that I don't have a problem with.
I'm sure you probably watched Entourage. It reminds me of that scene when Vincent Chase goes to Comic-Con, he's about to be Aquaman, and he knows all this stuff about the background of Arthur Curry. And it just reminds me of, like, you know, there's just a lot that goes into being a character. People are, you know, actors are professionals, and you know, there may be some roles you like more than others, but a professional means a certain thing.
It does. And look, actors haven't done a great job at selling professionalism as of late. So I understand if people are like, oh, they're just getting a check and don't care. Because a lot of actors, well, I won't say a lot, but I know a handful who don't give an F. They're just really pretty people, and they've never had to work hard, and they've never had to suffer. And the first time they struggle with anything, they quit right away because their parents never made them, you know, try again. They were just pretty, so people did things for them. And that's a lot of actors, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they've had great careers, and some of them learn how to act, and some of them never do. Some of them, you know, their careers get cut short, and some get to work forever. And we don't know why. We don't know how. But, you know, for the most part, I would say actors try to look as good as possible because they don't want people to hate their performance.
Right.
So it just, you know what I mean? It's like when actors go in nervous to an audition, I'm like, you're going in there like they want you to suck. They want you to be the one, so they don't have to see 300 other friggin' actors going confident and happy, man. So, I try to equate it like that, if that makes any sense.
It makes perfect sense. So, I mean, we're talking about the fan community, and, you know, I mentioned at the top of the show, and I remember hearing this on a bunch of other podcasts, when your story about when you walked into your audition and all of a sudden you saw Dave Filoni, and you're like, oh my, you know, this is Star Wars. So how would you say the fan community has responded to your participation in Rebels so far?
You know, I've gotten nothing but love, actually. And I'm sure there's some guys that were like, yeah, you suck. But I'm not a big internet searcher. I don't have a lot of time for that. and the people on Twitter are mainly love. There was some guy that said if me and Ahsoka ever got in a fight, there was no way I could whoop her, and he's right. She had more training. So I didn't have beef with that guy. I was like, oh, yeah, she would. She's sick. I saw her thrash like six Mandalorians in 10 seconds. but or less. But
that was a man, Tuesday.
So, yeah. So, you know, it's just one of those – everybody seems to have been cool. And I expected more hate because the Star Wars rule of thumb is usually sort of hate, then consume every single ounce of it, hate on it some more, and then 2 years later appreciate it for what it was.
Yeah, and that's good.
And that's sort of the cycle that Star Wars movies and toys and video games all go through. And I'm guilty of that too with the video games because they made me so mad. just the Force Unleashed ones, not the other ones. But yeah, man, it is. I don't know. I get Star Wars is so. I don't know. I'm getting sidetracked. I don't even know where I'm going now. You guys get me so friggin' nerded out, and then all I can think about is damn Force Unleashed 2, where I fought Vader at the end and he didn't even hit me once. And I literally threw the controller on the ground and said, I'm done with this franchise forever. God mode Vader. That's friggin' stupid. That's my whole problem with the God mode generation and all these kids that play games that, like, when we grew up, we put quarters in. Mm-hmm. Those games were built for you to fail. They were specifically built for you to fail time and time again. You had to earn your boss victories. It took 10 tries to kill Bowser, and he ran away the first 30. He literally was Darth Vader. He made you earn it. And nowadays, it's like you get unlimited ammo, unlimited lives. Oh, and there's no damage taken, so you don't even need the unlimited lives. But we're giving them to you anyway. And you can kill people with a marshmallow gun. And kids don't struggle. They don't suffer at all. And then they get in a multiplayer game with me, and I go like 36-6 on them, and they cry and they freak out and they don't know why they suck. And it's because their parents have never beat them in basketball. Their parents let them win. It's just this whole God mode thing, man. My daughter, we train jujitsu and I will beat her. I let her know, like, hey, no, you just lost that one. I'm not just going to let her win every time, man. That's crazy.
No, you got to win. You win and lose with dignity, and you learn something from it.
Yeah, when we play Candyland, it's the way the dice rolls. If Dada wins, or his card, not dice, but if Dada picks the ice cream sandwich, he's going all the way to the end. That's just the way it works.
It's on. That's right. Yeah, that's fantastic. So Star Wars in general, just the fandom so far, I mean, it's just been such a great ride. And we just love being able to sit here and chat and nerd out with you, because that's really what it's all about, man. Star Wars, at its very core, is fun. And so thank you for bringing the fun.
Man, I sit with my daughter and my son. You know, he doesn't know what's going on. He's too little, but he loves swinging a lightsaber. But my daughter wants to act out the scenes with me. As soon as the show's over, Dad, can we watch it again, and can we play Star Wars? She says, I'll be Hera and Sabine, and you can, and Ezra. She wants to be Ezra too. She goes, and you be you and Zeb and Chopper. I said, okay. And I said, and I do a Zeb. She likes my Zeb voice, right?
Yeah.
And you could be Zeb. I go, so who's going to be, you know, this guy? Who's going to be that guy? Whether it's Callus or the Inquisitor. She goes, nobody's going to be them. They're the bad guys. I said, all right. So whenever the bad guys come on screen, we run on our, she calls them her speeder bikes, but they're just these little, like, they're called plasma cars. And we just haul butt around the house and run away from bad guys. And she says all of Hera's lines. That's her favorite character. And Sabine is quickly growing on her. She's starting to quote Sabine more.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Random side note too. My middle one is 12 years old, and we'll play like NBA 2K or Madden or something like that. And like, we'll pause and I'll go to the bathroom or something. I'll come back and he will have turned up all of his guys to 99. And I'll be like, wait a minute. Did I just get terrible? And he's like, no, everything's normal. What are you talking about? And I always do like a Jedi mind trick on me or not, but I hear what you're saying.
God moding you, bro. You see what I'm saying? Like, when I was a kid, that was not an option. There was no easy mode on a game. It was, Here's the game we made. You better be good at it. And that was it. Oh, I guess we had Contra. We had up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B, A, B.
That's right.
So I guess that was it. But that was only 20 lives, man. That game was hard with just 20.
That game was hard.
Or when you go to an arcade and play Pac-Man and someone would change the settings where Pac-Man was really fast and all the ghosts were slow. That didn't end up being so fun. Yeah, it's not as fun.
I hated that. I saw two guys getting a fist fight playing Street Fighter 2. because this guy did a technique called a tick, where you would do a jump attack and they would block it. And as soon as you land, you would throw. And it was like an undefensible move. And they got in a straight up fist fight. And while they fought, I finished their game.
That's awesome.
Do you have ColecoVision?
My buddy had Coleco. I had Atari. So I would play Burger Time at his house nonstop, man. Oh, nonstop.
ColecoVision had the special controller. And you could throw a perfect pitch. And you could literally throw just strikes the whole game. And the game would be over. And that talk about getting some fist fights going.
Yeah, man. Video games back then would get people hot.
Yeah.
So Freddie, at the end of each show, every guest we've ever had on, and we've been very blessed to have a lot of amazing guests, we asked them five different questions, very similar to Inside the Actors Studio with James Lipton, just to kind of see the commonality between people who are passionate about Star Wars and work in the Star Wars world. So we'll start out with the first one for you. What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Empire Strikes Back is my favorite. That was the ultimate action movie, and it just happened to take place in outer space and on different planets. That's out of all of them, that's my favorite one. Even out of Clone Wars, and I love Clone Wars. It's my favorite out of anything Star Wars.
Awesome. So, your favorite Star Wars character?
Oh man, it finally came out. My favorite character was Boba Fett, man. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, he had a jetpack, and man, that was so cool. And when he caught, you know, all the bad guys kind of win in Empire Strikes Back. So, you know, like wrestling, I liked a lot of the bad guys because on free TV, the bad guys always won. Vince McMahon would make you pay $50 to see the good guy win on the pay-per-view. So I really rooted for the guys that won, and Boba Fett was awesome. And then Jedi came out, and they just crushed my dream. And guys would be like, yeah, go ahead, be Boba Fett. Nice. And then I would just have to take the loss.
So what is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, it used to be who's scruffy looking, but we had this line that was so reminiscent, and this was the Han Solo line. Where I'm basically saying, don't get cocky, kid. And, so that sort of transformed. There's like a YouTube thing where they repeat it like 100 times. And I just kept listening to it over and over and I couldn't stop laughing. And so that's probably my favorite line at this point. I mean, anything Yoda says is money, but that's probably my favorite line.
When you said Yoda's line in the most recent episode, was that a pretty cool moment in the studio? Do or do
say
not.
Again?
When you got to say do or do not, there is no try, what was going through your mind?
Oh, yeah. Dude. I mean, and you'll see more of that. He'll quote the old masters a lot, and some of them he won't even know. And Ezra will finally kind of get hip to it and kind of question him, and he's going to be like, shut up and do it, okay? he'll have sort of some very humble moments as a Jedi master.
It's smart. I love it.
So if you collect, what are some of your favorite collectibles that you own?
I no longer collect, but when I did, it was Marvel Comics. And my favorite, it's more than one, but I had 1 through 52 of the X-Men. And I had them all framed in my old house.
Wow.
And since then, have only the first 10 framed. But, you know, my 1 through 9 are my favorite collector things. It's really the only thing I hung on to. I got rid of a bunch of stuff a long time ago because I just didn't collect anymore. I stopped going to comic book auctions because Nicolas Cage would freaking buy everything. $1 million on a book that was worth like $40,000, and he would just change the whole marketplace and didn't even make it fun anymore, man. So I just stopped. He had billions of dollars, and you know, I didn't get paid like he did.
Did you what about Star Wars wise? Do you have a favorite Star Wars collectible or did you have one?
You know, I had the Darth Vader carrying case, and the only guy who wouldn't go in the case was my Boba Fett character because I brought him to school with me. Like literally, like that's how much I loved the character. I would hook a paper clip, I would kind of take the fat part of it and bend it so it looked like an L. And then I would take the hook and I would wrap it around bottom part of the L, I would wrap it around Bobo's waist, and then the top part of the L would be like a hook, like a like a hook you could put on a rope and like a zip line, right? And in my bedroom, I would take, my mom used to, well, she used to have a lot of thread. I would take thread and I would literally have like 100 different zip lines all throughout my room, taking out G.I. Joe figures, taking out Army Men, taking out Transformers. It was all Boba Fett. And my mom would walk in my room and like, if you think she got caught in a spider web, she would have so much thread wrapped around her. She'd be like, Jesus, Freddie, stop with all this. Where's my, and just go off on me. But literally that was probably my favorite toy.
There are so many people that are listening to this show right now. They're just thinking, man, he's just like me.
He's right.
We're all the same, man.
Yeah. I mean, and we're, I mean, you know, Corey and I both have families of our own and kids and stuff like that. So we always preach to our children. I preach to my students, you know, be who you are. Don't ever be ashamed of that, because that is what legitimately makes you cool. So
no, for real, man, you got to find out who you are and you got to embrace it. And if people don't get it, they don't get it. Move. You know what I'm saying? Move. You'll find move a place along where people get you. It'll work out. Don't conform to what everybody just wants you to be.
Yeah, I hear you, man. That's, well, your fresh outlook on it is it's refreshing. It's fantastic. And just the way you're describing things are just awesome. Freddie, it's been such an amazing pleasure having a cup of coffee with you. Where can people get in touch with you online if they just want to say hello?
My Twitter is very, very original. I didn't know what to do, so I just looked at Sarah's, and I stole hers, and I just did, I think it's at R-E-A-L-F-P-J-R, F-P Junior.
And we'll put a link to that in our show notes, too, as well.
Thanks, man.
Well, hey, man, it was an absolute pleasure, and thanks again, and we'll send you a little a tweet or a DM when it's coming out.
Yeah, cool, man. Absolutely.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great night.
All right, gentlemen, you too.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torak on iTunes.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.